Blog Talk Radio.
On Blog Talk Radio, and I was just having a great conversation with my friend Jenny Dietrich, who is on the line with me here today, and of course we got to talking about all kinds of things completely unrelated to the podcast today. Yes. During our 10-minute warm-up time, we're going to be talking about, okay, what's our plan, what are we going to do, and then so I just sent Jenny an email, a little note in Skype that said, winging it as usual. So basically,
which is pretty typical of us.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun. It just, why always do everything so, oh, I have to say this, I have to do this. How boring is that?
But it is kind of boring.
It is boring, but we like a little excitement, we like a little fun and just kind of natural chemistry and see what happens, of course. So I'll just frame things a little bit here, and then I'll get started with Jenny here. But basically, we were having a conversation after our last series of podcasts, which were really, really fun, but it was on blogging. So we did a series of three podcasts about blogging, and we thought, well, okay, what are we going to do next? And I think, I don't remember exactly what the specific thing was that I had read or seen, but I knew that Jenny was doing a lot of public speaking. And I remember, I think I had asked you if you had ever been formally trained. And
right.
So you were kind of giving me your history. And it was kind of interesting because we're kind of the opposites. So Jenny is your trial by fire, learn by doing public speaker. And I'm sort of the guy who went to Toastmasters to learn how to do it. So we both bring something unique to the table here today. And maybe we'll just get started. So, of course, Jenny Dietrich is the are you the CEO? Is that your job title? I have to look at
Yes, it's funny because for a long time I was just like, I called myself the shallow figurehead. But then as we started pitching bigger business, they wanted me to have a real title. So
your real official title now is CEO of Arment Dietrich. But
yep. You're
also I guess the brains behind the start of the Spin Sucks blog, which is a very popular and very cool blog that you should check out, and just a great person to chat with. So, Jenny, so tell us a little bit about your public speaking, where you came from, and if you hadn't guessed, I'm going to interview you first.
Okay, and then I'll ask you questions.
And then you can ask me questions.
Fabulous. Okay, what was your question?
So my question was, tell me how you got started with public speaking.
How did I get started? You know, I think I officially got started with paid speaking anyway just a couple of years ago. But I worked for Fleischmann Hillard, and in the beginning of my career. And a lot of what Fleischmann does is they go on new business pitches, they go to client presentations. So you learn from a very early career age to present, to speak, to get up in front of an audience. I didn't actually start doing big audiences, like 1,000 or more, until a couple of years ago. And it's pretty funny because it still scares the crap out of me.
Well, with good reason. I mean, that's you walk into a room and it's like, wow.
Yeah, they're like, you can't see. All you can see is crowds of people. You can't see, like, you can't even make out your friends. And It's intimidating.
So no eye contact.
Well, it's hard when you, I mean, a lot of the speaking that I do is to Vistage Groups, which is a CEO organization, and that's only, depending on what it is, probably 20 or 30 people. So you have the ability to have some one-on-one conversations and brainstorm some ideas and really get into the conversation. But when you keynote and you present to 1,000 people, they have all the lights on and they have, cameras at you and all these things, and you really can't even see your audience. You just see heads. You don't really even see who you're talking to.
Wow. Yeah, that would be, I think, a little unnerving.
It is.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
It's funny because you'll ask people, do you still get nervous? And And so many people say, no, when you do it as much as I do, you don't get nervous anymore. And, you know, I speak 3 or 4 times a month, and I still get nervous. So the people that say they don't, I think are fibbing.
Well, you know, I've met people that appeared to be just amazingly comfortable in front of groups, but I think it just depends a lot on the group and what they're talking about.
Sure, yeah.
So,
I mean, it definitely helps if you're comfortable with your message, but it's still pretty intimidating.
Yeah, I could see why. Absolutely. So, okay, so you started out with, now you got to give me a little more detail on the background. So what was the nature of some of the stuff that when you were at Fleischmann, what is it, Fleischmann Hibbert? Is that what you said?
Hillard.
Hillard. Sorry, I'm not from the PR industry. Can you tell? So,
yes, because it's one of the largest, so you would know if you're in the industry.
Oh, okay. I would not be able to forget that name in 2 minutes. Trust me, I can forget things faster than that.
Absolutely.
But so early on, so what was the nature of some of the earlier opportunities that you had? Were you ever kind of thrown into difficult situations? Was it impromptu? Did you get the plan? What was the basic types of things you were dealing with? All the above?
You know, I remember very distinctly an experience I had when I was 27. And looking back on it, I really had no right to be put in the position that I was. And it was, I mean, from my perspective, it was great that my supervisors trusted me as much as they did to put me in this situation, but they sent me out to pitch Welch's grape juice by myself. And I was pitching with two other Fleischmann offices, the New York office and the Sacramento office, and I was representing Kansas City. And then we were also pitching with the ad agency. So my team had sent me with a plan and a slide presentation of everything that we were going to present. And as we were rehearsing, literally the night before, the ad agency decided to change the whole presentation. And because I was young, I wasn't confident enough to stand up to this guy and say, hey, look, you know, we put this together for a reason. There's a strategy behind it. You know, today I would never let that happen. But back then, you know, I was not really young.
I think Jack Bauer agrees with you completely.
Yeah. So we ended up presenting what the ad agency wanted to present. And, of course, it was geared more towards advertising than PR. And I almost lost my job over it because I, you know, my boss was really upset that I hadn't stood up for what we had put together and that I hadn't had the confidence to do it. And then, of course, her boss was mad at her. And so, I mean, it was just, I almost lost my job over it. So that experience really, it made me a little bit skittish, but it also taught me that when you know something's right and when you have a strategy behind what you're doing and you know what your message is, have the confidence to stick up for yourself.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it takes those kind of, I don't know, those, what you would exactly call those, but those sort of down moments or just sort of disasters.
That's when you learn, right?
Like, oh, I don't want that to happen again.
Don't want to do that again.
Yeah. So, okay, so that seems like a very uncomfortable kind of a situation because obviously if you disagree with what they wanted to do, you're also going to lack confidence with in the eyes of the client, which is probably the worst thing.
Yeah,
that could happen.
I guess it's respect. I don't know. Hindsight is always 20/20.
Oh, of course. I think it could happen to anybody. I guess the one thing I would disagree with is that you weren't qualified for the job, because obviously, from where you started to where you are today, it indicates that you were every bit qualified for that job because you were destined to be doing some great things in your industry.
Ah,
so, I would disagree.
I was way too young, but thank you.
Well, you have to start somewhere, and
you do.
Somebody
That's
has true. To give you a chance.
Yep.
So now, you mentioned that some things you prepared for, some things you were impromptu. What would be some of the impromptu types of situations that someone in that position would have experienced?
You know, if this happens all the time now, where I'll go in to meet a prospective client, and it's not presentation per se, but I still apply the same skills to it. where you know, you're asking a lot of questions and you're understanding where they're coming from so that you can brainstorm some ideas together. And when you meet somebody for the first time, it sort of becomes that impromptu. So even though it's not getting up and performing in front of an audience, you're still having to perform in front of one person. And so that's sort of how I started the whole speaking career, is really being able to, learning how to delve into conversations and bring people out and get out of them what you need in order to do your job.
Very cool. Yeah, I think that speaks to the sort of the impromptu part of that being really kind of an essential skill for people that are in any kind of sales capacity.
Right. Well, and then you've experienced the impromptu on the other side. So talk about what Toastmasters does for the impromptu when they're teaching speaking.
So that was quick. good question, though. So basically, there's kind of two main main aspects as far as the speaking portion of Toastmasters, and one of them is prepared speeches, and the other one is called table topics. It's impromptu speaking, and I love table topics because in table topics, people do cool things like, you know, have a box of fortune cookies and you take out a fortune cookie and then you have to talk about whatever you see on your fortune. Or they'll hand you a note with a single word on it and you have to talk about that. So it just really kind of challenges you to think on your feet, to come up with something to share with the group. And, you know, I think that helps people that may not be as comfortable with that. It's all about pushing your comfort zone, really, I think, with speaking and a lot of just developing yourself.
What's the comedy called where it's impromptu like that, where they give you, start class and you have to, what's it called?
Is that like a British show or something? No?
No, it's like, there's a term for it. They do it here at Second City. I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm picturing, except that you're not trying to be funny. You're not trying to get an audience to laugh. You're actually doing something business related.
Yeah. Okay. You're talking about that sort of comedy that's kind of ad lib, but
yeah.
For it, and of course everybody's laughing. They're going, oh, they don't.
Yeah,
know
they're all yelling at us right now. Yeah. Oh, I have no idea. I can't think of it right now.
My No, me either. My brain is often not as sharp as it used to be. It'll definitely come back to me after we're done with the call, of course.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's kind of how Toastmasters brings that in. And
I'm picturing table topics that you have to stand on the table. I have no idea why, but that's how I totally envision it.
That's
standing on the table with the word.
I'm wondering.
You
know what I thought of when my uncle long ago told me about Toastmasters. When he said Toastmasters, I pictured people giving toasts. That's fun.
It is kind of a strange thing.
But it's actually, that's a very, you know, kind of deceiving term in a way, because I don't think we ever did any toasts at Toastmasters. I'm trying to remember. There may be a project in one of the books that has a exercise for toasts, or maybe for recognizing like a roast, you know, doing a roast kind of a thing. But all in all, it's really just about, I think, building communication, leadership, and speaking skills, kind of all three. So
what does this prepare you for? I mean, you're not doing a ton of speaking right now, are you?
I should do more speaking.
I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah, no, I love speaking, actually, as long as it's about something that I enjoy.
Sure.
And I love, when you mentioned, you know, Vistage and smaller groups, I love a group where I can just sit at a table with people and have a conversation and review some material that's valuable to them. A lot of times the smaller the better, but I realize that that's not the best way to get a message out, because you obviously, the more people you're reaching, the more amplification, the farther your message is getting out there about whatever it is that you're talking about.
Sure.
I love talking about, like, I'll talk about blogging, I'll talk about social media sometimes, but I also do stuff around IT. Like, I've been doing more about information security and
things like that.
To me, is it's strangely enough, I've become more passionate about that. After 15 years, I just read some stuff last year that just made me angry.
Really?
And after being angry, then I became passionate about giving back to my industry and playing a more active role in the communication of those ideas and those problems to other people. So I've certainly invested some time doing that, and that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, no, I am committed to being on an ongoing basis to speaking publicly in my career and my, even for personal things and whatever. I think it's just a great thing to do.
Yeah. So. And, it's funny because as I started building Harmit Dietrich, one of the services we offered was speaking engagements for clients. And if it's done right and you target the right organizations, you can actually develop business from that. It's our number two driver of business, my speaking.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty significant. So every once in a while when I'm feeling travel weary, all my team does is stick the financials in front of my face and go, but this is what it does. And I'm like, okay, fine.
Oh, funny. Yeah.
So I think it's something that should be part of everybody's marketing repertoire.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for that. But, I don't think you and I haven't had a lot of conversations about my philosophy about growing business. But I'm very much like, I'm not anti-marketing, but I am really not at all in people's faces. And I'm really very hesitant to take kind of a selling approach. I love it when people...
But I don't think you have to. I mean, I don't. I'm not a salesperson by any means. And what happens is when you speak, you're seen as the expert. And people want to work with the expert. And if you're a good speaker and they like what you have to say, they call you because they want to hire you. So I don't think that it, by any means, is an opportunity to sell. I know there are people that will say, oh, if you give me your business card, I'll send you an e-book that nobody else can have or a webinar that people pay $50 for or whatever. There's some of that that goes on. I don't even do that. I probably should do some of that a little bit, but I feel like we get enough good business just from me being me, not selling. So I don't necessarily think you have to sell.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you don't, and I hope that you won't start doing that.
No, it's not in my personality at all.
That turns me off so fast when a speaker sort of presents some type of a, I don't know what you call it, but...
They present and like then the last 15 minutes is their sales spiel.
Their ulterior motive.
Right.
Whatever. It's sort of like, look, if your information is valuable... That's all that matters.
Right. Absolutely.
Don't worry about the rest of it. That's my philosophy. But again, I am not, I'm like an anti, I guess I'm in a lot of ways like an anti kind of salesperson.
I don't think there's anything wrong with. I mean, I'm growing my business, right? As of today for 2012, we're 7-0 on new business pitches. I mean, we're kicking butt, but I don't sell. I'm not a seller. And my team's always like, oh, Jenny makes rain or, she's developing business, but never have they called me a salesperson because I think in our minds, sales equates, the pushy guy that says, oh, buy my product. And I think your philosophy is the same as mine, mm-hmm. where selling really is marketing and networking and building relationships. It's not buy my product.
Right. So let's give people a little bit more on this public speaking thing because I think this is really great. So basically, just sort of acknowledging what we've discussed here the last few minutes, public speaking is a great way to market your expertise in a very constructive and tasteful way.
Right.
You have things that you're knowledgeable about that you can share with people. It's a great opportunity. So maybe we can talk a little bit about finding speaking gigs and that, because I think you probably have some pretty good suggestions along those lines. So what's the best way to...
So there are a few ways to do this. I actually just had a conversation about this with a friend. Look for webinars opportunities. SpinSux Pro is always looking for speakers for webinars. So look for, you know, in your industry, there more than likely are organizations that are doing webinars or training or education online that you can contribute to and be a presenter for, because that actually allows you to move out beyond your network. Do your own webinars or trainings where you actually are the one presenting the content and the topic. I started out because Vistage, I'm a Vistage member, and so, you know, 3 years ago, they wanted to do a webinar on social media, and I was the only member out of 20,000 members who was using it at the time, and so they invited me to do the webinar. And the first webinar was so popular, there were something like 2,000 people on it. They invited me to do a second one, and that second one was what launched me into speaking to their monthly groups. So I actually had to put a cap on it. I had to say I can only do one Vistage group a month, because I could probably spend 3 days a week doing that, and I have a business to run, so I couldn't. Trade organizations. You know, when I started out, I was speaking for free for CRSA, for our local chapter, and for the national chapter. So look for opportunities like that with trade organizations. Eventually, you're going to get to the point that you start to get asked to do speaking opportunities, because when you're a good speaker, the word spreads pretty quickly, and the word spreads really quickly within your industry. So at that point, you can start going, okay, wait a second, we're not going to do this for free anymore. But webinars are a great way to do it, online training and education, and then your trade organization.
And that's a great point that you make. So now when does somebody... So now you're in demand, and obviously people understand that you're a great speaker. And so how do you transition from that doing it for free to, hey, I'm getting paid to do this now?
Well, there are a couple ways, and this is how I did it. So this may or may not work for you. You may be more aggressive than me, or you may not be comfortable with this. But this is how it works for me. 2 years ago, I started getting paid. And so I said, okay, I'm going to still donate my time for speaking for the trade organization, so for PRSA, and for nonprofits. But everybody else, for-profit organizations, have to pay me. Last year, I said, okay, I have to drop the nonprofits, because I was getting so busy that I just couldn't do those anymore. And last year, I still did local events and the trade organizations for free. This year, with the book coming out, I'm not allowed to do anything. So it's nice that I'm able to say my book contract prohibits me from doing this for free. Otherwise, I would feel bad and be like, okay, I'll do it.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm actually under contract that prohibits me from doing it. So you can look for little things like that that make you feel less guilty about saying no.
Well, I mean, I think people also in general, if they're not respectful of your time and your investment in that, I mean, if they don't think that it's of value to them to where they're willing to or able to pay for it, then I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, you feel bad, but you can only do so much for free. I mean,
right. And you only have so many hours in the day, right? And if you're going to have people that are paying you to speak, it's not really fair to them that you're also doing it for free for others.
Right.
There's one thing I was going to say about that. Oh, this is my favorite one, and this happens all the time. Well, if you speak for us for free, you're going to get lots of business from it. Number one, when you speak for an organization for free, people see you differently. They don't see you as the expert that they see you as if you're being paid.
Huh.
You don't get business from free ones, hardly ever. Number two, if you try to negotiate, you know, well, can I have the attendee list or anything like that, the organizations, 90% of them are pretty reticent to give it to you because they, you know, these are their members. They don't want to give out email addresses. So I would caution you and be wary of the, well, if you speak for us, you're going to get business from it, because you typically don't. And just like anything else in life, you pay for what you get, right? And if you're paying for the speakers, you're gonna show up, you're gonna take notes, you're gonna be engaged, you're gonna ask questions, and you're gonna follow up. If you don't pay for the speakers, you might check your BlackBerry, your iPhone, you're checking your email, you're tweeting, you're not paying attention, you're not fully engaged. So you have to kind of weigh those things, but you definitely have to do some free speaking gigs in order to get your foot in the door and, you know, build your reputation.
Very interesting. So what's the longest presentation you've ever given, the longest speech you've ever done?
3 hours.
Holy smokes. Is that something?
Those are the Vistage ones.
Okay.
It's actually workshops.
It's a workshop, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll do like 45 minutes of prepared stuff, and then I'll let the group take me where they want to go. Some groups are very tactical. They want to know, like, how does Twitter work and how do I set this down? And other ones are, you know, really strategic. How am I going to measure these results? And give me an example of how you can relate some of this back to sales. So it just depends on where you are. LA is a I love to speak in LA because they're so smart and so savvy. Very, 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 very strategic. And then you get into some of the B cities like Omaha, and they're like, okay, show me how Twitter works. So it's just, I mean, that's a gross generalization, but it's pretty typical.
But one based on experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, therefore, factual. But, well, no, I mean, it shouldn't really come as a surprise. You look at how the access to the technology, the, you know, in the schools and things like that. I mean, there are certain areas that really lead the way, and
sure.
Then there's other areas that are a little bit more laid back, and maybe they're a little bit more traditional in their education process. And
right.
So it kind of makes sense. And then you look at LA, and it's just, well, I won't say anything bad about LA because I've never lived there. So
you know what I have to say though, from a speaker's point of view, they're as savvy as Silicon Valley. I mean, they're probably the savviest business owners I've had the opportunity to work with in the whole country.
That's very interesting.
Even here.
Yeah, no, that's very, very interesting actually, but at the same time, it doesn't really surprise me because I know there's a lot of pockets of very, very bright people. I was in Portland last year, and I had never been in Portland, and I was really impressed with how savvy people are.
Yeah, there. I love Portland.
I mean, there's some really sharp people there. There's some cool kind of incubator concepts going
mm-hmm.
on, and just really a level of sophistication that's just pretty cool. So, no, it's neat. I'm somewhat like, I guess living in the Bay Area, I'm immune to that whole Silicon Valley.
I'm sure.
Versus the rest because it's sort of like, there's those, you know, tech companies like Google and Apple and all them across the Bay, you know, it's kind of like no big deal. They're just.
Right.
But I guess when you're not around that, you would certainly have a different perspective to say the least. But, okay, so now 3 hours is a workshop, but actual prepared material, 45 minutes?
Yeah, I'd say. I mean, I definitely have a 3-hour speech just in case, but there are 45 minutes that I definitely want to get through, and then I allow them the opportunity to sort of steer it in their own direction. But if they don't steer it, I'm either not doing something right to engage them or they're fuddy duds. Probably the former.
Well, there's always that chemistry thing, and you're not going to connect with every single group that you speak with or speak for. So I guess that's to be expected. You're not going to.
Well, and there's definitely you're not going to connect with every single person either.
Right.
Just okay.
Yeah.
You can always tell, too, who's not engaged.
You know what's really funny, though? I have to tell you a funny story about that. So I spoke at a Vistage-like group, and it was a small group. You know, there's maybe 10 people there, including the facilitator. And there was this one gentleman who, he was kind of off in the corner. He didn't really seemed to have the interest in the subject matter that, because I was talking mostly about blogging, actually. And this particular gentleman paid me the hugest compliment at the end of that talk. And
really?
I was shocked because I thought I was putting that poor guy to sleep. But he said something to the effect of, you speak in a really simple language that's easy to understand, and I really appreciate that because it's difficult for me to understand things like the material that you talked about today. And I was just like, wow. You know,
wow.
I was just really, really surprised. So I would just say to you that when you think somebody's disconnected, I think there's different forms of listeners.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, sometimes that guy that looks like he's practically falling asleep, he may be getting something out of your presentation. And it's hard to imagine, because I know if that was me, that would mean I was completely disconnected.
Right, right.
Ready to pull out a cot and just lay down and start snoring away. But apparently, you know, some people, they...
That's how they absorb.
Yeah, maybe that's the way, because that's how they watch TV at home. I don't know. Just
sitting there with their eyes closed. Resting their eyes.
Listening, you know. Yeah. But it was a real eye-opener to me, and I think it made me rethink that whole, you know, who's getting something out of this. Kind of.
That is interesting.
So never underestimate. And feel free to use that, by the way.
I'm going to, thank you.
Yeah, if anybody's ever falling asleep, just say, hey, you know, a friend of mine told me this story about people that are falling asleep in speeches. Yeah, anyway, so it's all fun stuff. So what's the kind of, do you find yourself using much in the way of humor during your talks? How much of a role does humor play to you in your speaking?
Oh, I think I'm kind of a funny individual in general.
Hey, I'm just asking the question.
I don't do, like, jokes or anything like that. I mean, there are definitely phrases or quips that I know will make people laugh. So I'll, you know, just based on the last 3 years of doing it all the time. So I'll definitely throw those in. I throw in images of monkeys just because I like monkeys, and then that always makes people laugh. See, it makes people laugh.
I think picturing you putting up a slide with monkeys in a business presentation.
Totally do.
I love it.
Yeah, totally.
I love it. I think that's great advice. So I think not taking things too seriously.
No. You know, I mean, I'm respectful of the audience always. So if I'm speaking to a CEO organization, I'm going to show up in a suit. If I'm speaking to our trade organization, I'm probably going to be just a little bit more dressed than business casual. But from the perspective of presenting, I'm not a buttoned-up, serious person. So I'm not going to present that way. I'm not going to speak that way. And if you don't like it, well, I can't please everyone as much as I hate that.
Well, you have to be yourself.
Yeah, you do. Otherwise, it doesn't come across as passionate or believable.
Yeah, and who would want to force somebody? I mean, even if you don't like somebody's material, would you want them to change to fit you? I personally wouldn't want. I think that's just an unfair and unrealistic expectation.
Yeah, I think so too.
So just be yourself, and the audiences that will appreciate your content and your style will be there, and, you know, the ones that don't, they're not going to ask you.
Obviously,
back.
They're wrong.
Well, that, exactly. Yeah. They've got it all wrong. So what are some of the other things that you do to keep your audience engaged and awake, besides monkeys?
Monkey work, my little quips work. I actually do a lot of voice inflection.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps a lot. And I'll call on people too. So I'll say, you know, I don't give people the opportunity to raise their hand. I'll actually call on people, which if I were in the audience, I would be mortified as an attendee.
Mm-hmm.
But it works. So I just know as an attendee, I'm going to sit in the far, far back so that nobody can call on me.
Wow. Well, yeah, because you've got them. They're afraid and they have to pay attention because
right.
You call on them, They've got to be able to. They've got to be ready to answer your question, or they're going to look.
Exactly.
You're using fear. But hey, they'll be better off for it, right?
Right.
So maybe they just forgot to have their coffee that morning, or whatever.
Yeah. You know, and I remember Adam Singer spoke at the Vocus Users Conference last year, and I was sitting in on his presentation before I gave mine, and he beforehand asked like five of us to be prepared with questions just in case nobody asked any. So I thought that was really smart. And people did end up asking questions, so then I got to be a smart aleck and ask them a question that had nothing to do with anything. So I had a serious one and a smart aleck one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's smart. You know, if you're going to speak to a group that's larger than 30 people and you know a couple of people in there, just pull them aside ahead of time and say, hey, would you mind having a question ready so that I'm, you know, during the Q&A time, so that either you need to get people going because nobody wants to be the first,
right?
Or heaven forbid nobody has any questions. So I think I thought that was a really good idea.
That's a great idea, although I also have reservations about that.
Why?
I don't know. I just feel like, you know, if people don't have questions, and but.
Yeah, but in some cases, especially when you're doing conferences like that, you have to fill up the time. I mean, you're given an hour, and you're told you have 45 minutes to speak and 15 minutes for Q&A, and if nobody asks a question, what are you going to do for 15 minutes? So you have, as a speaker,
you're
as a patient,
forced to,
you have to fill the time.
Okay, well, I guess, I mean, each situation, I've never personally been in that situation, so I don't really have a basis for it. But in that context, it does make sense, and it's good to have friends in the audience anyway.
Right.
And
it's also scary to have friends in the audience.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. So have you ever had family members or anything like that in your audience? Who's the person that has been the most difficult to have in the audience?
My brother. It was really, really funny because I spoke in Atlanta, I want to say like in September, and it was for an organization that one of their communications directors reached and sucks, and she kept saying, well, we want to have Jenny. And so I was the opening keynote for their conference. And my brother, who has a different last name because I'm married, is this organization is a client of his. And he was the closing keynote. And we didn't even realize it until we both got the agenda.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm flipping through, and I'm like, what? So yeah, he was there for my opening keynote, and it was super stressful.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, it was really funny.
So do you think he was also a little stressed by it?
Well, I wasn't there for his.
Oh, okay.
It was a three-day conference, so I just flew in for mine.
Oh, okay.
But he's a big guy. He's like 6'5", and he weighs, you know, 250 pounds. He's a big, big guy, and he's standing in the back. And all I can see is his face. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to die.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So if an audience is small enough, how do you go out of your way? How do you handle your eye contact?
I learned that you start, you know, in the right-hand corner and you look there, and then you go to the middle of the room, then you go to the back of the room, then you go across the left-hand side to the middle and to the front, and that. So I sort of do that path of going around the room several times. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I'll go the opposite way, you know, to mix things up, but that's how I don't know where I learned that. I'm sure I learned it years ago, and it's just something that stuck with me.
But now, are you actually looking at, when you can see people, are you actually looking them in the eye?
I do, yeah.
Okay. So you're not looking over their heads, or?
No, I look them in the eye.
Okay. That's really good. You know what's really kind of funny about this is a lot of the things that you're talking about are things that they teach in Toastmasters, because they talk about using humor appropriately. They talk about vocal variety, inflection in your voice. Mm-hmm. They talk about eye contact. They talk about a lot of the things. So, and it's interesting to me that you, in essence, did you just learn this by doing it, or did you? So you didn't read a book that said better public speaking, or you just went out there and figured out what worked.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
The first one I did was, it wasn't a disaster, but it definitely was not my best. And, you know, you get feedback from every single one. And if you don't, I always ask for feedback. Always. Because I want to know.
Yeah. How do you ask for feedback? How do you present that to your audiences?
Usually it's done through the organization.
Okay.
It's one of the questions I ask beforehand when I'm working with coordinators. Do you have a mechanism for feedback? And if they say no, then we just do like a quick survey, but afterwards. But I think it's only been one or two that haven't collected feedback.
Okay. Well, I guess especially in the paid speaking, it's probably they want to get the feedback because
right. They
want to know if they got a good return on their investment.
Yep, absolutely.
So.
And it's good for you as a speaker to get the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
Hurts your feelings a little bit sometimes, but it makes you better.
Well, I mean, yeah. No, I guess it just it depends on what you're interested in.
Right. All right.
So if you want to improve, then obviously you're gonna want to hear it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the best way to improve is by getting feedback.
Yeah, that's interesting. So. Now, do you have your own kind of feedback form or anything
no.
like that? That you,
no.
So you basically just work through the channel that's
yeah.
there. Okay. That's pretty good. So what's the best compliment you've ever received from anybody?
Just a couple of months ago, I had a gentleman come up to me and he said, there are lots of social media experts out there, and my joke is that anyone with a Twitter account or a keyboard is a social media expert. And I said, yes, anyone with a keyboard and a Twitter account is a social media expert. And he laughed and he said, I've seen quite a few presentations like this, and my heart's starting to sink at this point. And I said, oh? And he said, far and away, this is the best presentation I have ever seen because you're a business owner and you understand how to translate all of these efforts online to sales results, to my revenue, and to my profit. He said, I've never seen a social media quote-unquote expert that's been able to do that. He said, you made me a believer. I was like, that's the best compliment I've ever had.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is great. That's an excellent thing to hear. Well, you know what's cool, really cool about that kind of getting that kind of feedback too is it helps you understand what you're doing well.
Absolutely.
Not
absolutely.
Just, you know, certainly you can
sure.
you can always get the feedback about what you're not doing well, but it's also good to know, well, what am I doing well? What
right.
am I
yeah.
doing, you know, so you can play on those strengths and work on the weaknesses.
Absolutely. And it's, I mean, that, you get all kinds of feedback, you know. I didn't like, I mean, I've gotten things like, wow, she's super cute, and I didn't like what she was wearing. Like, I mean, sometimes you're just like, looking.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems bizarre.
Yeah.
Apparently that was anonymous, right? Feedback?
No. No.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Somebody put their name on that. Wow, she's super cute.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
I think maybe he was going to get a date. I don't know. He writes that and I'm going to call him. I have no
yeah.
idea.
Right. Oh, that's pretty funny. Yes, people keep it real.
Yeah, no kidding.
So what's the, now, that's, I'm sure that's not the strangest comment you had, and I don't know if you really want to share the strangest one, but is there a few of the kind of more bizarre bits of feedback or comments that you've gotten that you would like to share?
I think the most bizarre one was that they didn't like what I was wearing.
Did they give any specifics?
No, just didn't like what I was wearing.
What were you wearing?
A suit.
So what's wrong with the suit?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know if they didn't like the cut or the shirt underneath or I have no idea. Okay.
You know what? I have one thing to say about that. I think that person was obviously... That person probably does not have very good self-esteem.
Or something.
Because
weird.
I can't think of another reason why someone would criticize what someone's wearing when they're wearing, obviously they're wearing something that's professional.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't in a mini skirt and
I mean, I could understand if it was like you were wearing something inappropriate.
Right.
But if you're wearing something that's business casual, you know, business, what's the point of that? That's just, yeah. I think somebody was trying to make themselves
feel better
at your expense. So.
Whatever. You definitely have to develop a thick skin.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, does it?
Nope.
That's a very valuable asset, I think.
And not to say that, you know, sometimes it doesn't, the thick skin doesn't work, so.
Yeah. No, I mean, it doesn't matter how thick your skin is. Somebody's always going to get through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so. That's why we shouldn't be mean to one another.
That's right.
The subtle little hint there. Subtle little tip. Be nice.
Be nice. Treat others like you would like to be treated.
So what would be like the dream speaking gig? Where would you just absolutely love to give a keynote or give a speech?
You know what? I gotta say, I'm going to Norway at the end of March to speak at the Rethink Conference. It's kind of cool. I'm not gonna, you know, I'm going out there for free. It's kind of cool. It's kind of a dream thing.
So you're pretty excited about that.
I'm kind of excited about it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I actually would love to keynote the PRSA International Conference. But
you should.
They have not asked.
Well, maybe now that they know that you would be willing to do it, maybe they will.
Yeah, I would love to.
Take you up on your offer.
Maybe if I could get something in Rome and Paris, that'd be all right. I could do those as well.
I think Rome would be pretty good. Rome would be all right.
I think that'd be all right, too.
Yeah. Love Italy.
Me, too.
Yeah, the food is just...
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
There's no better food on the planet that I'm aware of.
I agree.
In Italy. Love it. Anyway, well, I asked all the questions that I wanted to ask. So do you have any more questions for me about Toastmasters? Or anything else?
I got through them all.
You got through them too? Good. Well, there's no rule that says that
we have to do an hour.
Do an hour. So we did 42 minutes. No, sorry. It's 47 minutes. And I think it's pretty darn good.
Awesome.
So hopefully people listening have some great takeaways that they can either start speaking or they can elevate their speaking or maybe start getting paid to speak. And where should people contact you if they want to talk to you about speaking at the PRSA International Conference?
Well, I'm on every social network there is. Or Twitter is probably the easiest. This is Jenny Dietrich or spinsucks.com.
Very good.
Where should people find you?
Well, thank you for asking, Jenny. I'm just kidding. No, I'm Hackman J on Twitter. And Twitter's always good. I have a blog that I don't update enough. It's joesonsocial.com. But it's because I'm very busy sometimes with my kids, my family, and my business. But it's fun to blog there. But there's a contact form on joesonsocial.com.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, hey, great chatting with you. And
great to chat with you too.
Thanks for everyone who listened, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Joe. I hope you have a great day, too.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you still?